Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, welcome to the Brad and Bunny Basketball Podcast, featuring former Sydney Kings captain and multimedia performer Brad Rosen, alongside Australia's longest-serving basketball writer and blogger, Buddy Nodge, and me, Gilar the Invincible, the voice of a man you just had to have. Now, talking all things NBL and WNBL, here's Bradley.
Well, hello, everyone, and we start with massive, massive news that has come out of the NBL and pretty much all around the world of what's happened. The remaining NBL Grand Final series have been cancelled. That's right. They have cancelled the remaining games of the Grand Final series between Sydney Kings and Perth. Game 4, which was scheduled for Friday, the Kings management have indicated yesterday, they did not wish to proceed with the remainder of the series. And the uncertainty because of the effects around COVID-19, otherwise known as coronavirus. Body thoughts?
Very, very disappointing, but we can't ignore what's going on around us and around the world. You have to take that into account. And I think the NBL, maybe it was a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction. I'm thinking, why don't they just play the games in a neutral venue in the middle, like the Adelaide Entertainment Centre?
The Body Nodge Entertainment Centre.
There's my solution.
Larry Kesselman came out yesterday and he said we respect the decision in what are extraordinary times, which is very true. We understand of not just the players' health and well-being, but obviously their families, especially given that so many of the families live overseas. It's a difficult one, and really let's get to the guts of it now. They have said that they've consulted Australian Basketball Players Association and decided that remaining games will not be played. With Perth leading the series 2-1, they will now consider a decision on the outcome of the championship.
Yeah.
So do you draw? Do you give it to the Kings because they were first on the ladder? Do you give it to Perth because they were 2-1 up? What do you do, Body?
Oh, well, look, I'll tell you what you don't do. You don't have joint title holders. You don't sort of say, well, it was a joint thing, and you don't vacate the title. We've got to have a champion. And on what it is right now, the Perth Wildcats are 2-1 up. They won two games in Sydney's venue, and I think you've got to hand the championship to Perth. That would mean
Hang on. Yeah, can you give them the championship? They haven't won three games.
Yeah, but you've just got to alter it and say, okay, we're going to go best of three, because the reality of this is that in 1986, we had our first best of three grand final. And I think that was the case till about, early this century. I think the first best of five was the magnificent, arguably the best of five, the Sydney Kings versus West Sydney Razorback series. Remember that one?
Yeah. Oh, I was part of that one, baby.
That's why I asked if you remembered it. Correct. And then there were a couple of more over the following years with Brisbane and Melbourne. And then we went back to best of three when Basketball Australia took control of the league. And now, so look, what I'm getting at is more than 20 of the championships have been decided on best of three. And I know we didn't go in with a best of three intent. And when you've got a best of five, you're sort of thinking, okay, we've got another game up our sleeve at home and here and there and whatever. It's a different mindset. But three games are played. Two of them have been won by Perth. Both of them were in Sydney's venue. And I just think that's the way you've got to go. That to me is the correct answer, that Perth Wildcats win the championship. I know a lot of people will disagree, as do you. But, can't say, Sydney Kings were...
You're just saying that because I go for Sydney. No, I'm joking. Look, I can see the merit, but let's go back, 48, 72 hours. If the Sydney Kings are in do and die and all season long, every time they have been under the pump where it's can they do this and can they do that, they have performed. To be able to say, right, they played a great game on Friday night and won in an away arena, to then back up 48 hours later without knowing that's the championship game. And because they drop that game, now it's like, well, you lost the championship. I don't see how that's fair, mate.
Yeah, the point was they couldn't do it, could they? Even if they were to win game four, if it went ahead in Perth, some of those guys couldn't scrub up again in 48 hours. And so you'd actually predict the Perth. So this would be one of those incredible series where everyone won on the road. But I still would expect Perth to come out 3-2 winners in game five. If it went to a game five, I expect they would win. Look, Andrew Bogut was magnificent in game two.
Oh, he was.
He was pretty good in game one as well, just quietly. But in game two, he was magnificent. Okay, and Kevin Lish was magnificent. They were fantastic. All right, now, Lish still was able to do some good things in game three, but Bogey was pretty much unsighted in game three. And that trip back from Perth to Sydney for a seven-foot guy, 35 years old, had a history of injuries, has been managed for the last seven, eight games. So I'm not sure how big a factor he would have been in game five. I mean, knowing the guy, I know he would find something and he would dig it out and he would
Last game.
Realistically, on what we've seen so far, Perth is the better team. In this series, Perth is the better team.
And the results will be very interesting to see what comes out in the next, well, I guess 24 hours. We'll see what comes out. It'd be great. But why don't you tell me your highlight of the week?
Before I do, I want to ask you, what is your solution? You put it on me. What is your solution to this situation? Would you like to see joint title holders or no champion on what has arguably been our best season of all time? No champion, though? So what would your solution be?
Honestly, and I don't think it's a lose-lose. And I feel very much for the NBL and the players involved because it's nothing they've done wrong. Right, they are caught up in what's going on in the world, and it's such a shame. Honestly, I would do it joint. Yeah. I would do it joint. Why should one team lose because it's out of their control?
Well, realistically, if you're going head to head, Perth has now beaten Sydney five times out of seven. Okay,
no,
let's not say it's joint. They've beaten them five times out of seven.
But I agree with that. That's like saying, you know, you go into a grand final in AFL or rugby league game and you lose all season long. You win the big one. Yeah. Now, that could be the Kings. They get to, you know, next Sunday if they win on Friday night, which I thought they would on the road because no one seems to win at home in this series, right? Yeah. And they get to Sunday and then it's do or die. We have not seen this team play against each other when it's do or die. Nothing left in the bank. Doesn't matter.
Okay, but let's examine it at absolute merit. Game two in Perth was the first time they had to play without a crowd, okay? And you immediately saw the difference that 13,000 people make. Now, that's a difference that is a valid difference. You know, you can say, okay, that is what home court advantage is. You've got 13,000 Red Army people screaming for you. So you take them away. This is the first time we've seen this situation. There's no crowd. There's just a handful of people. All right. And suddenly the Perth Wildcats get called for 25 fouls. The Sydney Kings for 15. A situation that has never, ever occurred previously at RAC Arena. So the lack of a crowd absolutely impacted on the Perth Wildcats, more so than the Sydney Kings. I mean, let's face it. I mean, Daniel Kickett is not noted for his defensive prowess. So when a guy drives and hits him in the key and he's flying backwards and his head and shoulders are already behind him before the contact's even really been made, and he gets the benefit of that call, 13,000 people would have guaranteed that he would have got a flop and a foul on that. But you take that away and you take away what is home court advantage. That's what home court advantage is. All right, so now we go to Sydney, and Sydney experienced the same thing, okay? But the Sydney guys haven't played in front of 13,000 people on a week-by-week consistent basis for the last 10 years or 8 years, however long they've been at RAC Arena.
Correct.
Now we go back into Perth, and this time the Wildcats have made their adjustments. They know they're not going to get 13,000 assistants. So five times out of seven they've won. Okay, it hasn't been a do or die. 2-1 they lead. They've been by far the better team in this championship series. I give it to them. And you know, I'm an Adelaide 36ers guy from way back. Not so much anymore, but from way back. And Perth was the arch rival. So for me to say this, Brad, you know, I've given it a lot of thought, and I think that they should be awarded the championship.
Yeah, look, it's I don't envy the decision, there is no. It's such a shame, and you know, let's go back. I mean, not even 12 months let's go back 6-7 months and, you know, the NBL announced the next stars and LaMelo Ball comes out and RJ Hampton and the league just goes bang, you know, and the crowds have been up and the attendance have been up and we've had over 10 million views on Facebook when a LaMelo Ball gets a triple double or whatever he does against New Zealand and these things. And the season has just gone tick, 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 tick. Grand final series. The two top teams got through. Cairns, brilliant. Melbourne fighting at the end. New Zealand, a train wreck at the beginning of the season, came rolling home. Brisbane, nearly about, like, every team had a story. And to finish it like this, it's a shame. And I feel for the NBL because they've done a tremendous job. It will pick up. Like this, you know, with what we're going through from all accounts, it will, you know, we'll get through it. And I guess lucky for the NBL and lucky for, you know, us as a sport, we're at the end, not the start of the season like the AFL and NRL are dealing with right now. So, you know, this will all be over, we hope. And we hope the Olympics goes ahead and we set that. But there is a lose-lose situation. And I just feel the right thing would be to either A, I can't see how you could give it to one team, but either A, say nothing, but that's just not fair to the players that have gone this far. So I just think joint, but I don't know, mate. You know, we got some fantastic feedback on our listeners, by the way. Listeners number 7, number 11. We had one 711. Did you see that one? That was brilliant.
Yes, I've been getting them too.
So it's been brilliant, brilliant feedback. So keep coming in. Let us know your thoughts on what you think. And, Boddy, give me a
highlight of the week.
Sorry, my highlight actually was it sort of follows another highlight. So let me sort of take you to it. My highlight was the fact that Trevor Gleeson, as coach of the Perth Wildcats and probably the most underrated coach in the league, given what he's done, he made his adjustments for game three. Like I've got to give Will Weaver credit with the triangle and two that he ran and the defensive systems they ran to try and negate Bryce Cotton in game two. They were successful. They held him to 27, which is his lowest score against them, considering he's averaging around about 30 against them.
Just to add to that, Boddy, 27 points at 44%.
Yeah, and last quarter. Which
they
was,
did a
which
good job big. On that. I agree.
Because the way he was going, 27 points in three quarters, he was still on his way to 36.
Yeah.
So for them to stop him in the last. So look, they made their adjustments. Congratulations. Well done. But what I really enjoyed was the fact that then Trevor Gleeson's team made the adjustments and they attacked that triangle in two and they won handsomely. They were 19 up at one stage and they weathered the best that Sydney had to offer and they got through. So my highlight was the adjustments that the Trevor Gleeson made and that the Perth Wildcats made in game three. Tell me your highlight. You must have had one over the last two games.
Yeah, I have. Kevin Lish. Just to see that guy play the way he's played. I mean, you know, he hasn't played a lot of games for the Sydney Kings in now his fourth season, right? So he's had a lot of injuries. But for him to come out and in game two, he had 19 points and that step back dagger three from the top of the key was just brilliant. Played 25 minutes, 19 points. I thought he was great. That was in Perth. And then you go to Sydney, where obviously they lost, but I still thought he was really good. He had 16 points. And I think he's been a shining light for them. And the way Casper Ware has played, which has obviously been pretty non-existent in this series, he stepped it up and kept that team rolling. Obviously, Tate's been great. I thought Newley Bogut's first two games were phenomenal, but I really thought Kevin Lish showed the class and why he is an MVP of our league.
Yes, dual MVP and an Olympian and a fantastic basketball player. Let's keep talking about that, though, because in game three, when the Wildcats got away, Brad Newley had a 16-point second quarter. Mm. Then the third quarter started, and Jay Sean Tate was kicking butt. And then Kevin Lish got going. These guys spent a lot of time on the bench. What the hell is that about?
Yeah,
stop
look.
Stop subbing guys off when they're kicking ass. It's ridiculous.
All right. Give it to me, buddy. I know you know it. How many subs this week? Come on. Let me know. I know you're heading there.
Well, I have to look it up because...
Funny you say that, he says. Funny you say that.
Because I think it was 60...
I can tell you now. It was 61? 46 to 22.
No, that was the week before.
You're right. 61-34.
61 substitutions, for God's sake. It's a 40-minute game. Let them get into the game. Yeah.
25-9 in the last quarter. 25 substitutions in one quarter.
Honestly, you see, this is not – I'm telling you, he did some coaching in game two or ahead of game two to make the adjustments, which we haven't seen all season. We haven't seen Sydney make a single adjustment all season, but they did for that game and they got that game. But then to just slip back into 25 subs in the last quarter, crying out loud.
Yeah, I agree. Let me just break this up. So as commentators, I'm always told that, you know, you can throw out numbers, but you've got to put it in correspondence with something. So, you know, we could say someone, like we used to have heart rate monitors on the players and you go, oh, their heart rate's 100. What does 100 mean? Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, well, okay, so if you're 100, well, you know, this guy's 200, so you can see his energy. So just to break this up for you, in the first quarter on Sunday's game, it was 9 substitutions each. Right. The second quarter was 15-8. So 15 for the Kings, 8. Third quarter, 12-8, and then 25-9 in the last. So like Trevor Gleeson, 9, 8, 8, and 9 as his substitutions. Right. And Will Weaver, 9, 15, 12, 25. So my thing that I get, and that's 61-34, and I have been a former coach and I've been an assistant to the greatest ever coach in Brian Gorjan. I can't say the guy, I don't understand what he's doing. Like, I can't say that because this guy was on top of the ladder every end of the round for the whole season. Finished in first, won all coming into Friday night, made some great adjustments after Friday, I should say, not coming into Friday night. So after Friday night, made some great adjustments. You can't query the guy, but I do have to say I've never seen it like this. Okay. I haven't seen that.
I can query the guy because I'm not a Sydney Kings person, okay, unlike you.
Let's take that knife out the back. Thanks, mate. Yeah.
Oh, it was right in your chest. Don't talk back. Now, I'm going to contextualize what you said. They were the top of the league for 20 games, for 20 rounds, sorry, and 28, the 28 matches. Okay. But, and we've discussed this before, he did not have this level of rotation going on. He rotated a lot, but he didn't have this many guys that he was using. Sure. You know, Craig Moller got injured. Didi Lazar got injured. Lish missed most of the season. You managed Andrew Bogut through a few games. There was a lot of stuff going on, right, throughout the year. He didn't have access to this particular group, this full team, this incredibly talented deepest team possibly of all time, all right? And he had Deshaun Taylor in there. There was lots of stuff going on during the year that is not being mirrored now, okay? And to have that many subs, it's disturbing because I don't think – like there were moments in the game where I thought, where's Newley? Why isn't Newley on there? He was kicking butt in the second. Where's Lish? Why is Lish – why is Daniel Kickett on the floor? Why is Casper Ware on the floor? He's stinking it up. I love Casper Ware. And if I needed a guy taking a shot for my life, I'd want it to be him. But he's stinking it up, okay? It's in his head. Mentally, he's gone. He can't make a shot, all right? So Kevin Lish is killing. Leave Kevin Lish at the point. Yeah, make some other adjustments. Get Sean Bruce in there playing a bit more. He hasn't put a foot wrong. I just, you know, I think... sometimes I look at Will Weaver, and I think this is only his second head coaching job and maybe his second year as a head coach. And I think back to what was his previous experience with the Long Island Nets in the NBA G League, and there you've got, you know, a dozen players that are all trying to get 10-day contracts, all trying to get back to the NBA or get to the NBA if they've never been there. And so your obligation then as a coach, I expect, is to give all of them an opportunity to play, to sort of show their stuff so that anybody in the NBA that's looking for one of these guys can see him and see him and go, okay. So I think he's coaching the same way. And we don't, are you trying to win a championship, Pete? Because if you are, keep Kevin Lish on the floor, keep Andrew Bogut on the floor. I mean, unless Andrew was hurting in game three, which I suspect he may well have been due to his impact in one and two, which were quite some distance apart. And then between two and three, they were very close. So, okay, fair enough. But realistically, I just think he has not had his best players on the floor enough. Now, to see Craig Moller come on for the last 20 seconds of a quarter or something. What are you doing? What's that about? Either play the guy and have him in your rotation or don't play the guy. Don't give him token crap minutes. It's just you're coaching to win a championship, and I didn't see that in game three. I didn't see it in game one. I saw it in game two.
Look, I can't argue with you as much as I want to.
Yeah, you can. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, no, but you're right. You are right. And you'll never hear me say that again. But you are right. So I do understand where you're coming from. And I say it again with what I say. I've never seen it like that before. And again, I put it into context of what we're saying here. It was 61-34. That is just such a – it's not 40-34 or 45. It's 61. How do players get rhythm? But, you know, that to me, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. Maybe these guys want 2 or 3 minutes in and out very quickly. That keeps their energy up. I don't know. But it is something that I would love – to find out why. Why is that philosophy what you want, and why is it that, you know, well, it's worked, but it hasn't worked.
You say that. It worked when he was going with less guys. It's not working now. Let's not kid ourselves. Come on.
I've got some homework for you. I've got some homework, and I want to know how many subs he had at the beginning of the year then when all those players were out, all right? Get me that homework.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry, I don't care that much. In fact, I'm far more interested in what your Rosen Rattler is.
Uh-oh, Rosen's Rattler.
Well, my Rosen Rattler for me is none other than Nicholas Kay. Nick Kay is a phenomenon. This guy, he is like, let's be honest, not extremely athletic. Guy had 30 points in game three, 7 of 9 from the three-point line. He has been 30 points, 12 rebounds. And I know there's questions whether he should be in the Olympic team because all these NBA players. Mate, let's hope we have the Olympics on.
Let's just not get ahead of ourselves. Let's hope there is an Olympics. So, yeah.
Assume there is Olympics. Mate, that guy's got to go. That guy just has to go.
You know what's impressed me most? I mean, I love that as a rattler, and it's a good one. But what's impressed me most is I saw this kid when he played his first few games for Townsville, and he was quite raw, but he stayed within his skill set, and he just worked his butt off all the time, every night. And then as his game has started to evolve, at Illawarra Hawks under Rob Beveridge, firstly under Sean Dennis and under Rob Beveridge, now under Trevor Gleeson. He's had a pretty good run with coaches in terms of quality coaches that have brought the best out of him. And he has added to his game. So he's not the same kid he was when I first saw him. When I first saw him, what took me about him and made me think this kid's going to be a star was just his work ethic. It was so strong. But now you add to that the ability to make the three-pointer. Wow. Wow. I mean, when he's got 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 6, 5 out of 6, why aren't you coming out to the three-point line? Defensively, why aren't you making the adjustment? The guy's killing you. He scored 21 of his 30 points from the three-point line.
A four-man in this league that doesn't shoot a high percentage. Not well, he does shoot a good percentage, but just because he doesn't take that many. But if you're going to offer him, he's going to do it. So it was an interesting run. Righto, let's get it. Give me your rattler.
My rattler? I don't have a rattler.
Sorry. I'm not a nudge nasty.
You're the one with the rattler. We should do a rattler noise. Anyway, okay. Here comes my nudge nasty.
Here comes nudges nasty.
All right, my nudge nasty is from game two. Kevin Lynch has got the ball. He's just outside the key, and he flicks it inside to Andrew Bogut, coming through for a magnificent, almost windmill dunk, slamming it down like you wouldn't believe. The best dunk that he's done this season, an emphatic dunk. It took him to 19 points, which was his season high in scoring. So there's no better way to get to a season high than that. It was just phenomenal. It's one of those times where they showed it from 3-4 different angles, and I never got tired of seeing it. Whereas sometimes you sort of go, yeah, okay, let's move on. But this was just terrific. It was a statement dunk, and it was the moment that anybody watching the game knew that the Sydney Kings were not going to lose game two.
Well, I just fell over. That's correct. I believe it's Bonnie Nodge has given some credit to the Sydney Kings. Yes!
Hey, I've given
we got the whole way to the end of the season. We got the whole way to the end of the season, oh, and he's given one. That's it. Cancel the rest of the games. No, Cancel the rest of the games.
I've actually enjoyed a lot of what the Kings have done this year. Really.
You know, and that was a great nasty.
It was a nasty dunk.
I love it. Yeah, no, you're right. Boddy, before we finish up, I want to get your thoughts on the 36ers. We've spoken a lot about what's happened over the last few weeks. Don't want to go there anymore. But there's a lot of talk about the coach. Now, we've heard Phil Smyth, and you've written some articles about this, which is great. Phil Smyth, Kevin Brooks has been taught. There's a few out there. Why don't you elaborate a little bit?
Well, look, as far as Phil Smyth is concerned, they made a move to try and see if they could rekindle his interest in coaching, having won three championships in a five-year span as coach of the 36ers. Although he was there for 11, but the budget changed after year five. And Phil, he entertained the conversation and thought about it and said, no, he's hooked up with the Brisbane Lions AFL team. He's got a gig in Indonesia. He's just not interested. I think they offered him the opportunity to sort of mentor or assist if Kevin Brooks was appointed. But he's got other things on his plate, and he's not interested. So now, when his name gets mentioned in this conversation, it's total BS. He's out. Okay. He's not interested. Good. He's gone. Okay. So now we're looking at Adam Capehorn. He's very much in the running. I think they're also keen a little bit on Aaron Fearn. And I believe they might have even talked to Mark Dickell. There are a number of people who have come into the conversation, but Adam Capehorn seems to be firming as the favourite. He would be a bit like Marty Clark revisited, so it would be definitely a rebuilding time and a time when I think elements of ownership would be able to sort of dictate how they want this team to look. So that's what I'm hearing at the moment, but the talks are ongoing, and who knows if another candidate might just pop out of the woodwork. Personally, I would have gone straight to Rob Beveridge's house and offered him the deal. And if he wasn't available, I would have caught a plane to Japan. Might not have been able to get back in the country, but I would have talked to Sean Dennis next. But if they're looking for fresh blood, new blood, that's the direction they appear to be going.
I'll give my 10 cents worth, and we know you're right on the mail there, so you've heard it here first. Let me say, I think Adam Capehorn, great coach. I'm just not sure if that's what Adelaide need right now, but obviously that's the way the club Beveridge tick. Should have gone there. Simple, done, move on. Mark Dickell. I've had a lot to do with Mark when he was at the Sydney Kings. He played point guard there for a little bit under Moose Trebillion. And, mate, I tell you, that guy has got basketball coming out of his ears. I know that he played under Brian Goorjian. He's coached in New Zealand. He's coached a few players around the world, went to college. That guy, I tell you what, he's a hell of a coach. Now, he would have that team humming. I would love to see him coach in the NBL. I don't see it happening. It would have to be a good option for him. But I'm telling you now, he would be brilliant. But it doesn't sound
agree more. No, I couldn't agree more, but I don't think he's interested in that job at this time. But, full credit to the Sixers. I've reached out to a number of people. So, good luck to him. But I'm hearing Adam Capehorn has the front running. He also is very on good terms with Josh Giddey, who is their Australian Next Stars pickup for next season. So, maybe that might have factored into it as well. Who knows?
You heard it here first. You heard it here first on the Brad and Boddy. Well, that's it for our chat today. Thanks, Boddy. It was awesome. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I do want to let everyone know that we will be back next week, definitely. We will wrap up the WNBL and NBL seasons. We'll have a chat. We'll give out some of our best thoughts and worst thoughts, some of our best moments of the year. Boddy, what do you think?
Yes, I like it. I'm looking forward to talking about Vaughan Mabry and his work with the video this year. Fantastic.
Oh, I love it. You heard it here. Boddy Nodge, BOTINAGY.com. Make sure you check out. He is the best writer in the world. In the world. Check us out on social media. We love you guys all. Thanks. Does that sound a little bit like we love yous all?
It did a little bit. But then you're from Sydney, so it's totally appropriate.
And we're minor championship or whatever you call it. And joint
regular season champions. You're not a footballer.
and joint NBL winners of 2019-2020.
I think you've been smoking a joint anyway. All right. Talk to you next week. Look forward to
it. Thanks, all. See you next week.